You know those cravings that hit you out of nowhere? Charred steak tacos, silky mushroom risotto, or a perfect summer salad. When the craving hits, CookUnity delivers, made with real ingredients and no shortcuts. CookUnity was made for adventurous eaters, with 160-plus award-winning chefs curating an ever-expanding menu of small batch meals. Get ready to eat meals delivered directly to your door, all tailored to your lifestyle, dietary needs, and cravings. Their roster of Food Network alums, James Beard Award winners, and acclaimed restaurateurs balance bold flavors and nutrition in their handcrafted meals, which are freshly prepared, delivered to your door, and never frozen. Get what you're craving. Try the freshest, best-tasting meal delivery made by your favorite celebrity chefs. Go to cookunity.com/crave or enter code CRAVE before checkout for free premium meals for life. That's free premium meals for life at cookunity.com/crave. You know those cravings that hit you out of nowhere? Charred steak tacos, silky mushroom risotto, or a perfect summer salad. When the craving hits, CookUnity delivers. Made with real ingredients and no shortcuts. Get ready to eat meals delivered directly to your door, all tailored to your lifestyle, dietary needs, and cravings. Get what you're craving. Go to cookunity.com/crave or enter CRAVE before checkout for free premium meals for life. That's cookunity.com/crave.
Today's guest on The Shallow End is Alex Efron. He's the founder of Collectors MD, a group that provides support to people struggling with addiction-like behavior around sports cards and other collecting spaces. Since the group started a few months ago, I've watched with admiration as Alex has addressed the elephant in the sports card room: addiction, secrecy, overspending, loss of control. The discussion you're about to hear might not be as enjoyable as hearing about a big chase or a big pickup, but it also just might be one of the most important pieces of content you listen to this year. Do we control sports cards, or do they control us? And how do we know or sense when that line has been crossed? If this podcast makes you think about yourself or someone you know, I urge you to check out collectorsmd.com. It's a great first step. My name is Dave Schwartz. I would Dave Sports Cards on Instagram. This is The Shallow End. Thanks for tuning in, and let's get started. Welcome now to the podcast. This is Alex. Alex, I'm very excited to have you on. We were chatting before we hit record about some of the reasons for doing what you're doing with Collectors MD. First of all, thank you for being here, and how are you?
Dave, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate you giving me the opportunity to come on the show, talk a little bit about what we're doing at Collectors MD. It's been a little over 2 months now, so there's a lot to discuss and some exciting announcements that we've been working hard on. So yeah, man, thank you. Thank you for having me.
Before we get into what I anticipate being an important and necessary conversation, for those people who are listening or watching and have not heard, can you explain what Collectors MD is and what the mission is?
Absolutely. So at its core, the mission of Collectors MD is simple. It's to bring support, awareness, and accountability to a space that often blurs the line between collecting and compulsion. We're not anti-hobby by any means. We still love the hobby. That's, you know, kind of something that comes up quite a bit. It's not about shaming people for enjoying cards or sneakers or comics or whatever they collect. It's about recognizing when the lines get crossed, right? When what used to bring joy starts to cause stress, damage relationships, or drain your finances. There are people out there who are silently struggling with this, spending money that they don't have, hiding purchases from their loved ones, chasing hits, feeling that dopamine crash the second the break ends, and no one's really talking about it, at least not in a way that feels safe or judgment-free, right? So that's where Collectors MD comes in. That's what we're here for. We host weekly support meetings. We put out content that speaks honestly about mental and emotional toll. The mental and emotional toll collecting can take. We're building a space where people can be real about their experiences without feeling alone or ashamed. We're also advocating for change within the hobby, within the industry, things like better safeguards, self-exclusion tools, transparency from platforms and breakers, because if the hobby is going to keep evolving, it has to do so responsibly. So yeah, this isn't just a content brand or a passion project. It's a full-fledged movement. It's one rooted in personal experience, real conversations, and the belief that you can love the hobby and hold it accountable at the same time.
And to be clear, oftentimes what gets most associated with addiction and gambling, and my mind went to Gamblers Anonymous when you first started going, and I know you've talked before about how that's a corollary there between the two.
Yeah.
But people consider the breaking side of collecting to be more associated with gambling and addiction. But really, it's not just that. It can also be toward just the small purchases on eBay and ComC and just buying and buying and buying. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's 100% correct. While breaking, I think, mimics gambling, more clearly, any form of purchasing something that you don't know the contents of, even if that's like a $2 value pack at Target or Walmart, is technically gambling. It falls within that category. So absolutely. I mean, gambling has existed within collecting, specifically with sports cards for decades, pretty much ever since, you know, it became popular. It's just become more and more glorified, especially by the manufacturers and the higher powers within the industry. They're creating mechanics, they're creating features within their platforms that mimic gambling to such an extent that it screams, you know, for reform. I mean, there has to be something that's put in place to protect the end consumer that is, you know, ultimately super vulnerable to falling down the wrong path.
Before we get too deep into the conversation, people might want to know what your background is. So who is Alex and what are your ties and history with the hobby?
Yeah, so my name is Alex Efron. I have been a collector my entire life. Started out really as sneakers. I was a big sneakerhead, and I still am to an extent, for many, many years. I, at one point, had over 500 pairs of sneakers somewhere around my mid to late 20s. When the pandemic hit, I was reintroduced to the sports card hobby by a friend that I grew up with. And I was invited to basically join a break group called BOGO Breaks, where we were breaking on Instagram and Facebook on a daily basis. This was early on in the pandemic, say like started around like April or May of 2020. And I got sucked in really fast, you know, having that sort of collecting gene in me. I just have always loved to collect not just sneakers, but memorabilia. I mean, I collected trading cards when I was younger. I grew up in the 90s, so obviously Pokemon and Michael Jordan and, you know, Upper Deck, Fleer, those were all deeply rooted in my childhood. And so, you know, the current state of the hobby, or at least the state of the hobby in 2020, was just so attractive to a collector, right? Especially someone who was collecting sneakers, which take up a lot of space. As you can see behind me, this is what's left of my collection. But, you know, at one point, it just got so out of hand. My wife, my girlfriend at the time, was scratching her head. Like, how are we going to... did I just lose you, Dave?
No, I'm here. You mentioned if you can see me. You said if you can see behind me, so I decided to make you bigger on the screen.
Got it. I was like, where did he go? So my wife, you know, would give me a hard time. Every purchase, every week, there was a new release, and I'd have boxes coming in, and the stacks were to the ceiling, and I was finding any and every crevice of our home to store sneakers, and it started to really get out of hand. So the idea of collecting sports cards or replacing the sneaker obsession with something a little bit more accessible and, I guess, collectible in terms of how much space it takes up, was just really attractive to me. So I got sucked into the hobby, first on the breaking side, but then started to join breaks, started to open personals, you know, quickly found a few shops that I would constantly break with or, you know, purchase those personals from. And that started to spiral. And, you know, I was also gambling, online gambling. Blackjack was my kryptonite. So I think like the sports card really fueled that behavior where, you know, there were cycles where I was joining $2,000-$4,000 breaks, getting skunked, and then going and playing blackjack to try to recoup my losses and doing it all over again. So it got out of hand pretty quickly. And so over the last couple of years, you know, I've been toying with this idea of collector's MD. I have experience going to GA meetings. I've participated in outpatient treatment, actually at a local facility here in Jersey called Right Choice Recovery, where they focus on problematic gambling and overcoming that addiction. That was like an 18-week program that I did about a year and a half, 2 years ago. So I have the experience, you know, through GA, through therapy. Not an expert in the space. I'm not a licensed therapist or a doctor or clinician or anything like that. But I've experienced the highs and lows of addiction firsthand. And I feel strongly that this area is completely lacking within the hobby, within the industry. And so I've been, again, toying with this idea of collector's MD for some time now. And a little over 2 months ago, I just decided to bring it to life, and it's been a rocket ship ever since. So
what led you to come to the conclusion that this was something that needed to be within the hobby? So you felt what you were going through, and I really commend you for working through it and getting help. And that's incredible. What were sort of the motivating factors for wanting to first identify the signs that this was also happening within the hobby, one, and then two, to do something about it?
Yeah. So I think I recognized it when I self-excluded from gambling. That's something that you can actually do in depending on where you live, but it's available in most states where gambling, online gambling, that is legalized. So I self-excluded in the state of New Jersey, first for a year, because you have two options. You could either do a year or 5 years. So this was back in April of 2023. I self-excluded reluctantly after a year, or sorry, for a year, after being, you know, basically directed to or advised to in these GA rooms by therapists, by, you know, family members. It was just really hard for me to sort of, you know, come to terms with that. And, you know, it was a part of my identity, right? It was part of my lifestyle. So it was hard to let go. But I eventually did it and sort of refocused my attention, my energy, my finances to the hobby and the hobby, you know, exclusively. And as I continued to, you know, join more breaks and open more personals and started to spend money that I shouldn't have been spending, was spending beyond my means, I started to realize how many synergies there were between the hobby and gambling. And the fact that I couldn't self-exclude myself, right? I couldn't put myself in timeout or you know, put myself in a cool-off period or take a break from the apps. I still had access, and I still to this day have access, was problematic to me. And it sounds a little crazy, right? Because like as a normal adult, you would think, you know, how does another adult not have the wherewithal, not have the self-control to avoid something that's toxic to them? But the reality is addiction is a real thing, and it affects more than just alcoholics and drug addicts and gambling addicts. And as a matter of fact, the hobby that we know and love has quickly turned into a gambling machine of sorts. And so, you know, again, not having these limitations in place poses a lot of risk, a lot of issues for people like me who are susceptible to, you know, falling into these traps and going down these dark paths. It's such a slippery slope in so many different ways. And so my hope, my intention with Collectors MD is that we create enough awareness for the hobby and the industry to recognize that these guardrails, these limitations need to be implemented in order to protect the consumer.
What has been the response over the last couple of months to Collectors MD from people within the hobby community?
It's been received extremely well. I mean, I was honestly taken aback a little bit, especially when I first launched it. I had people reaching out who wanted me to come on their podcast and talk about it. I mean, this was like just a couple days in, a week or two in, and I didn't quite realize what I was getting myself into, because this is, you know, surprisingly, I think to a lot of people, an area of focus that people have been talking about or at least thinking about for a very long time. And whether it's, you know, kind of a topic that people shy away from because they don't want to be judged or perceived the wrong way or associated with their brand for, you know, a number of reasons, that could be part of the reason why this hasn't really come into, you know, the light where it needs to be. But I think with collectors
stuck in a dinner routine rut, picking tonight's meal doesn't have to be stressful. Here's an idea. Let Cook Unity handle dinner tonight with premium meals delivered to your door. New menu drops, weekly recommendations, and a growing community of award-winning chefs. Cook Unity offers over 400 meals for every palate. Shake up your meal routine. Go to cookunity.com/rut or enter code RUT before checkout for free premium meals for life.
MD, it's allowed for that. It's allowed for people who feel like they've been alone for far too long to have a sense of community. And that's what we're doing with the weekly support meetings. People now have a platform or a community, I should say, that they can be a part of and know that they're not alone. There are other people out there who are struggling with the same things as them.
Say a little bit more about that, if you would, about the about these weekly support meetings. And if people sense something happening with themselves that they're not happy with, that they want to change, what tools does Collectors MD offer to help people?
Absolutely. So we started our weekly support meetings about 6 weeks ago, this coming Wednesday, tomorrow night. Today's Tuesday. I know this is going to go live Friday, but as of the time of this episode going live, we will have conducted 6 meetings. Those meetings basically have been inspired by my experience in GA, where we have a foundation called the Collectors MD Recovery Guide, which is basically an adaptation of the Gamblers Anonymous Yellow Book, which covers the 12 steps of recovery. There are 20 questions in there for anybody to read through to see if they potentially have a problem. And it goes through a variety of parts, ranging from, you know, when spending turns to the cycle to momentum versus intention to defining recovery, and really just digs into all these details about addiction and about how, you know, people can fall into these cycles within the hobby. And so we've had a really, really positive turnout. There's actually a Google Forms link that you can go to and answer a handful of preliminary questions so that we can collect your information and ultimately add you to these meetings. But we I think it was the week before last, we had our biggest turnout so far, which was 17 total participants, which was really, really awesome. And it's helped a lot of people so far. And I only expect it to grow.
I understand how important privacy is, obviously. But just what are some of the broader general topics that come up at the meetings? You mentioned you had 17 people a couple of meetings ago. What are some of the broader things that come up there subject-wise that if you brought them up here, somebody who is struggling and either they know it or they don't know it might recognize something in themselves saying, can we talk? Yeah, we've talked about X, Y, and Z or situation, something, whatever you can say that still protects people's privacy.
Of course.
That still on a broader spectrum might help somebody else down an easier path.
Absolutely. We do treat these meetings like closed anonymous meetings. So we do respect the privacy, and confidentiality of all of the participants, but I can absolutely give you a high level overview of what a meeting looks like. We basically just start out going through the guidelines, quick about Collectors MD, and you know, things like it's a confidential and judgment-free space. Participation is optional. You only speak if you're comfortable. Listening can be just as powerful. We appreciate honest and respectful sharing. We try to push for only offering advice when requested. You know, we want to offer support, but not solutions unless someone asks for guidance. We support, we don't fix. Our focus is on understanding, not solving. And so we make sure that everybody is on the same page when it comes to the guidelines. Then we go through the recovery guide. We spend about 10 minutes just walking through it. And then we reserve the majority of the meeting for our share and support. So that's an opportunity for members to share anything they want, anything they're comfortable with, whether that be, a recent experience or, something that, resonated with them that they maybe saw on social media, or just, something super general. We also include a discussion prompt each week so that if, people come in and they don't really know what to talk about, we have this on screen so that, it kind of gets people's brain juices flowing. So for instance, this week, the discussion prompt will be the stories we tell ourselves, how justification keeps us stuck. So we basically will explore topics like what are some of the most common justifications you've used to excuse compulsive spending in the hobby? Have you ever convinced yourself something was an investment or harmless fun when deep down you knew it wasn't? How do justifications show up in your language, habits, or thinking? Are there specific narratives like I deserve this, I'll sell this later, this is my last one that you catch yourself repeating? And what would it look like to replace these stories with more honest, supportive truths? And the objective here is really just to explore how the stories we tell ourselves can either fuel the cycle or help break it. And by recognizing the mental scripts we use to justify compulsive behavior, we can begin to rewrite them and reclaim a more intentional, grounded relationship with the hobby. So again, that's just there for people to, use as a crutch if they want to focus on a specific topic and they're not sure what to talk about. But again, we are very reformed in that we allow any and everybody to talk about whatever they want, as long as they're being respectful to others within the space and are being honest and open-minded.
Great. I'm just, for those of you who are listening right now, is I have up on the screen the link for the meetings. If the Google form that Alex mentioned is here, if you go to the website for Collectors MD, at the top is a resources link, and it can take you to this form among other things. So Alex, in your experience, what are some signs that people can maybe sense or recognize in themselves that might begin to suggest maybe I'm not in control of my hobby experience as much as I think I am, and maybe this experience is more in control of me?
Yeah, it's a great question, and it's actually a part of the Collectors MD Recovery Guide. When we have new members join, we will go through these 20 questions that, again, are adapted from Gamblers Anonymous and tailored for compulsive spending and collecting. And basically, if you answered yes to any of these questions, it's an indication that you're in the right place, you're not alone, and we're here for you. So I could go down that list real quick if...
Sure.
Yeah. So basically, actually, you know what? I have an abbreviated version just because, and I'll quickly caveat this. We've had so many people joining, and we try to keep these meetings within 1 hour, that reading this recovery guide ends up taking more time than we'd like it to, while it's extremely important and it's the foundation for our recovery. We want to make sure that we allow as much time as possible for everybody to get a chance to share. So this week, I've actually been working on an abbreviated version of the guide for group use. So it's basically just simplified for clarity, reflection, and pacing. And so I'll just read the 20 questions from that version. One, do you hide how much you spend? Two, do you overspend often? Three, have you sold things to fund your hobby? Four, have you lied about purchases? Five, do you check apps constantly? Six, have you missed work or plans due to collecting? Seven, do you get anxious when not buying? Eight, have you gone into debt over your hobby? Nine, have you broken promises to stop? 10, do you justify everything as investments? 11, do you feel a high when buying and regret after? 12, do you avoid looking at your finances? 13, do you compare your collection to others? 14, do you spend to cope with emotions? 15, have you set limits and broken them? 16, do you buy things you don't actually want? 17, has your behavior strained your relationships or health? 18, does your hobby feel like pressure instead of joy? 19, have you felt out of control? 20, do you worry you have a problem? And again, if you've answered yes to any of these questions, that's probably an indicator that you might want to just take a step back and reevaluate why you're collecting in the first place. And that's all it is. It doesn't necessarily mean that you have a problem or that like you've been diagnosed with some addiction or some psychological issue. It's more so just being self-aware, taking personal inventory, and making sure that you are collecting with intention and not compulsion.
And I'm glad you brought that up, because as I was listening to that list of 20 things, a couple of them I checked off myself. Namely, checking apps too often, and sometimes feeling more stressed out by the hobby than getting an enjoyment from it. But I think it's worth reinforcing that just because somebody maybe sensed one or two or three things in themselves with the list, that doesn't necessarily mean or trigger addiction.
Right.
But at the same time, it might. And so it's worth thinking about. Have you had people come to you in the last couple of months saying that either the guide that you wrote or the appearances that you've made the things that you've written, other people's podcasts you've appeared on, in which they have begun to recognize certain behaviors in themselves?
Yeah, absolutely. As a matter of fact, I'd love to read an email I received from, I won't name their name, but I received an email on Monday morning, and it really hit home for me, just because it sort of reinforced why I'm doing this, right? It made me feel validated in that Collectors MD is actually making a difference. So I'll read this email. Again, it came through actually 2 a.m. on Sunday. Hey, found your resources through some YouTube channels. This is definitely hard to talk about, as I'm sure many collectors feel the same way, but I do think I have a dependency on buying sports cards, not only as a coping mechanism, but also fulfillment. I guess my issue is I really do think I enjoy the hobby from a collector's perspective, but also I like the investment angle. The idea that I can buy these awesome cards that I can enjoy, but will also hold their value potentially over time. I think I'm a smart buyer now, more so than I was a year ago. I don't really prospect on young players so much, so I'm not into the gambling aspect of it as much, but it just gets me going emotionally sometimes, and it's messed up because I feel like this should be a fun thing to do, but it becomes stressful and sometimes financially detrimental to me. I'm not in any serious debt from it, but I definitely noticed the cycle of dopamine rush from getting a card I love to the come down and then back into needing to make a purchase to make any negative feelings go away. Just wanted to share this with you all, and it's comforting to know that other collectors feel this way. Thanks.
Yeah, so there's a lot there.
Yeah, that was really powerful for me, right? Because it's, again, like people don't necessarily realize that they are falling into these cycles, that they might be overspending or overextending beyond their means, or doing something that might be financially detrimental, as he said. But because Collectors MD exists, and because people are starting to recognize it, and it's, you know, popping up on people's feeds. And, you know, as I join more and more of these podcasts, more people are just talking about it. You know, it allows for a sense of awareness to come into play. People take a step back and self-reflect and ask themselves, hey, do I have a problem? Like, you know, I don't want people to go crazy and like suddenly, you know, have this hypochondriac type of reaction where like, I don't know if I have a problem or not. Do I need to get help? Do I need to start seeing a therapist? That's not what this is about. It's just more so about, again, just creating awareness and a space for people to feel like and know that they are not alone. And I actually just want to quickly mention something really, really important. And this is something that I had brought up earlier, is that I am not a licensed therapist, a doctor, a clinician, anything like that. I don't have any experience in the medical field. But what I do have is experience as an addict, right? I mentioned that I had a gambling addiction. I mentioned that I had an addiction to collecting. Those were two areas that became really problematic for me and my family, that you know, had a negative impact on my life. And so with that, I want to make sure that people understand that Collectors MD is intended to be a peer support group. And, you know, we're here to provide support and resources for collectors who feel overwhelmed, out of control, or financially strained by the hobby. We want to raise awareness, promote healthy habits, and advocate for responsible participation, not to shame or to criticize collectors or breakers, but again, just to provide a sense of comfort. With that, we just announced a partnership as of yesterday, Monday, June 2nd, where we have partnered with a licensed mental health provider called Birch's Health. So going forward,
I'm here on a job site with Tim, who owns his own electrical contracting business.
3 employees and 2 work trucks.
Tim traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance. We're positively here where he needs us most.
They sure are.
With step-by-step help on all his insurance needs, all for shockingly low rates.
Shockingly low, huh?
Just a little bit of electrician humour. Do you get it?
I got it.
You know, it feels like we have a real connection. All right, I'll stop.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at geico.com and see how much you could save. Get more with Geico.
If we have an individual that needs professional help beyond the peer support that we can offer, we can refer them and direct them to Birch's Health, which is, again, a facility that focuses on problematic gambling and behavioral addiction. So that's really important. It was a huge milestone for us. And again, it cements the fact that, you know, there's a need for this. It provides validity and credibility for Collectors MD in this space. And I'm really excited to see where that partnership takes us.
For sure. Congratulations on that partnership.
Thank you.
Do you, and I apologize if I missed this from one of your previous appearances, do you still collect at all, or do you have an involvement in the hobby beyond Collectors MD?
Yes. So I think this is really important. And this is something that I think comes up quite a bit, right? Because I mentioned BOGO breaks, which I'm not active on. We don't break anymore. I'm not a breaker at all anymore. I stopped doing that in, say, 2021. But I also have, you know, several other handles, one for my sneaker page, one for my cards. Haven't posted on either in quite some time, but as you could see behind me, you know, still have you know, a few pairs of sneakers, still have a handful of cards in my collection. And, you know, the contradiction, I guess you could call it, is kind of the whole point, right? That duality is my story. The blurred line between being a passionate collector and falling into compulsive behavior, that isn't theoretical for me. It's personal. I was deep in it. I love the chase, the thrill of the rip, the community, the culture, all of it. But I also know how easily that passion can tip into something darker, into something that affects your mental health, your finances, your relationships. And I think that's the part that will resonate with people, because so many of us are walking that tightrope, whether we realize it or not. So when people ask how I can be both, how I can be at the forefront of this movement and also be involved in collecting, how can I love the hobby and want to challenge the way it's operating? I tell them that's exactly why I started Collectors MD, not to cancel collecting, not to cancel the hobby, but to make space for conversations that the hobby doesn't always allow. Conversations about accountability, intention, and support. I'm not standing outside the problem shouting in. I'm speaking from the middle of it, just trying to light the path forward for anyone who's ever felt that same pull.
Okay, so there are two last things, not last, there are two things I want to get to before we let you go. The last thing is I definitely want to have to talk about the industry and things that are in place that make it pretty hard for people to navigate in certain ways. But before we get to the industry, I want to talk about a part of the site that talks about the three MDs. And you were on Denny Cards podcast talking about the three MDs and said, you know, you mentioned you're not a doctor, but MDs, it was sort of a play on word, and it's right. Mental detox, money discipline, and meaningful decisions.
Right.
Money discipline strategies, I think we kind of understand what's there. Meaningful decisions. For those of you who are listening to this right now, I have a page on the screen that lists these three MDs. And Alex has meaningful decisions as making decisions based on your values, not hype or external pressure. One is ask, is this bringing me peace or pushing me deeper into compulsion? And then third point, reflect on whether the purchase aligns with your long-term vision. Okay, so we have money discipline as one MD, meaningful decisions as another MD. The one I want to spend a few minutes on is mental detox practices. Sure. I think this is really interesting, and this is what I thought of personally with this. I've mentioned on this podcast and others before that the person who really got me into sports was my mom. She died like 20 years ago, right? But in the weeks and months after she passed, I've not mentioned this part before, as we were like cleaning out her clothes and helping my dad organize all her thousands of books to donate, that sort of a thing. And as he was going through finances, he realized that she had left him with tens of thousands in debt because she loved to, she was an addicted gambler. She would go to the casinos. We knew that. We didn't know the extent to what she was doing there. And because she also handled the finances, she was able to find a way to hide it. Right.
Right.
And so, over the last 20 years, me, like others in the family, have been a little bit more cognizant of our own behavior. Like, wait a minute, you know, sometimes addiction can be in genetic or inherited or whatever.
Right.
And think I'm okay for the most part, right? Right. But this mental detox part is where I got stuck. It's where I got froze. It's where I froze on. This idea of meaningful consumption, does this serve or just distract me? Declutter your space. And mostly take a break from apps, influencers, notification, or product drops.
Yeah.
Right. I've never been into a break. I don't collect sets. I don't care any of that, but it's the app part of it.
Sure.
Since I really got back into the hobby, I guess 2020, I guess now, during COVID, coming up on 5 years, I was looking back on the screen time component of my iPhone, which keeps track of how much time you spend online per day.
That can be scary.
It's scary. And as much as I'm on now compared to where I was before I got back into the hobby, it has nearly doubled.
Sheesh.
Right. Yep. And it is those apps. And, you know, my spending is under control. I don't have a big collection. I kind of align with what I want. But just the amount of mental bandwidth that I give over to the hobby is insane.
Right.
And in the meetings that you have and in the people that you talk to, is this something that you were seeing with people saying, it's like, I just can't unplug from the hobby. Like, I just can't like stop checking for cards, or sometimes even just, I think it was, I forget who, but someone else said, It's like hobby doom scrolling, where you're just going through Instagram, you're just going and going. Is how much do you see of this sort of a thing?
Yeah, no, I mean, it's a huge part of the cycle that we talk about. And that's why we've implemented it into these three pillars, mental detox being the first, right? And when we talk about mental detox in the hobby, we're not talking about quitting or deleting everything forever. We're talking about intentionally clearing up space, bandwidth, physically, digitally, and emotionally, so you can actually hear yourself think again, right? The hobby bombards us with noise. There's new drops almost every day now. Flash sales, influencer takes, hot lists, breaker hype, and it doesn't stop. It's designed not to. The more overwhelmed you are, the easier you are to manipulate. That's how marketing works, right? So the first tool we encourage is mindful consumption. That means asking yourself, is this serving me or is it distracting me? And, you know, am I watching this break because I enjoy it or because I'm restless, anxious, or feeling that sense of FOMO, you know, into thinking like I need to be a part of this or, you know, there are going to be consequences, right? We kind of like trick ourselves into thinking that. Another powerful piece of mental detox is decluttering, not just your shelf, but also your phone, your feed, your algorithm, unfollowing accounts that might trigger you to spend, muting breakers who never stop selling or never stop hitting you up. You know, you don't owe them your peace of mind, right? We also recommend taking breaks. So intentional time-bound breaks from platforms, from marketplaces, from group chats where it's always about the next chase. You'd be surprised how much clarity shows up when that noise starts to die down. Because here's the truth. You can't make intentional decisions when you're overstimulated. You can't tell what you actually want when you're being told what to want 24/7. So mental detox is about creating space between you and the stimulus so you can respond instead of react. It's not about punishing yourself. It's about creating peace for yourself. We detox not because we hate the hobby or want to exit the hobby or push it away, but because we care enough to engage with it on our own terms versus the terms of the manufacturers, the breakers, and the platforms.
All right, so let's now turn to the industry. And I purposely wanted to save this as the last part of the discussion because it can go any number of ways.
Sure.
When we talk about the industry, we could talk about pick your company, right? But you know, right. There's Fanatics, there's Whatnot, there's PSA, there's a million others. No, there's dozens of others. What sort of mechanisms within the industry and what they do you see that makes, I'm trying to phrase this carefully. What do you see within the industry that makes addiction of sports cards and all that comes with it that makes it harder to break the cycle?
Yeah. So, you know, I mentioned the synergies between breaking these, not just breaking, but the platform experiences, the user flow, if you will, and how it mirrors gambling to a T, right? So the hobby has become the Wild West. That's what we always say. You hear people saying that all the time. And so we are pushing for industry level reforms, not because we want to ruin the fun, but because fun without safeguards turns into harm really, really fast. And I learned that the hard way with gambling, right? We're advocating for basic, very, very basic, very rudimentary consumer protections that already exist in these other industries with similar psychological mechanics. Things like deposit limits, okay? So people can cap what they're spending before it starts to spiral. They can put in their settings on Whatnot or Fanatics that they're only allowed to deposit like $500 a week, something like that. Self-exclusion tools. So if someone knows they need a break, they can opt out and actually stay out. So if you constantly feel that itch, if you feel like you're not going to be able to control yourself later this evening, you know, once your partner goes to bed and you're, you know, tossing and turning and you can't fall asleep, you don't have to worry about, you know, falling into that trap where you're going to pick up the phone, mindlessly start joining breaks and wake up the next morning feeling that sense of regret. Transparency around odds, really, really important. If you're selling a randomized product, the buyer deserves to know what their chances are, just like you would at a casino or like in a loot box. We see this a lot in gaming. We see checklists. Sometimes we see pack odds for, you know, for manufacturers like Topps. But when it comes to repacks, when it comes to this gray area, this these products that are produced by breakers, by third-party companies, there's no transparency whatsoever. We don't get to see any sort of odds, and everything is engineered for the consumer to lose, right? The house is always going to win. This is all just sort of under the guise of the hobby. Next, we have standardized language and disclosure. So no one's getting baited. No one's getting bait and switched by words like guaranteed hits, high roller box, without understanding the real value proposition. And this is especially critical when it comes to live breaking, because the way it's set up right now, again, it is just a free-for-all. It's the Wild West. There's no regulation. There's no third-party oversight. There's no enforcement of ethical practices, just companies and creators cashing in on behaviors that, if this were gambling or even gaming, would be heavily regulated. Imagine this. Imagine if a casino let you gamble with no age verification, no spending limits, no player protections, and no posted odds. That's exactly what's happening here, except instead of chips.
Sorry, and that was one of my questions, and I'm so ignorant when it comes to breaking. What I was going to ask is, are there age checks at Whatnot and Fanatics Breaks or whatever it's even called? Do they check ages on those sites?
You know what? I'm not 100% certain if it's a part of this. I know you have to put in your age, but there's no way for them to really determine if a kid is going on there and lying about his, you know, birth date.
Right. So it's not like walking into a casino where they can check your driver's license.
Right. It's completely unregulated. So you do definitely have to put in your birthday when you sign up, but I'm not sure how rigid the verification process currently is, because candidly, I signed up for my Fanatics Live and Whatnot accounts years ago. But I'm sure it's very, very simple for a 12-year-old, you know, 11-year-old to, you know, download the app on, you know, mom's device and start using mom's credit card to join breaks. And it's something that's happening quite a bit. You see chargebacks and all sorts of crazy stories on Reddit and Instagram and so on. But what I was getting at is that, you know, with breaking, rather than chips, you're buying teams or repacks or instant rips. And while the hobby hides behind terms like entertainment and community, the mechanics don't lie. These are 100% gambling adjacent systems being marketed to consumers of all ages with zero guardrails in place. So reform doesn't necessarily mean like the end of the hobby. It just means the beginning of a safer one. That's all it is. It's just more transparency. A space where collectors don't feel like they're being exploited for profit, but they're actually being empowered to participate with clarity and intention. So it's about protecting the people who make the hobby what it is, which is the collectors. And it's long overdue. And frankly, I'm shocked as I've done my research and I continue to advocate for this. It's mind-blowing to me that Fanatics and Whatnot, and even the manufacturers, Panini, Topps, Upper Deck, none of these companies have taken any accountability or have, at the very least, raised a few points here and there. Hey, like this is something we should probably tighten up. This is probably something or an area that we should, create some rules for. It's just they continue to add new features, just make it more enticing, more, attractive to people who have these tendencies to overextend themselves to participate. And that's the scary part. And I mentioned this to you before we came on the live, But Fanatics Live just announced today, or I'm sorry, yesterday, this new feature called Instant Rips, which is basically their version of offering buybacks on repacks. So you purchase a repack for $800, you hit a $500 card, they'll give you 90% of that on the spot, you get your money back and you re-roll. I mean, if that doesn't scream gambling, I don't know what does, right? So it's fine that they add these elements. Like, gambling isn't illegal. Gambling, you know, is a form of entertainment for a lot of people that if they can do it within their means and they have self-control and they're not, you know, overstepping or doing anything as far as like lying to their partners or spending this month's mortgage on it, like, more power to you, like, do your thing. But there needs to be regulations in place, just like they exist for gambling. It's remarkable to me that something like this can be introduced by a company as big and impactful and game-changing as Fanatics, but still not have to create a sense of rules, guardrails, protections. Like, it's crazy to me that just doesn't exist. So one last thing I'll say is, like, when you're watching a sports game and you see an ad for a casino or a sports book, right, at the bottom of the spot commercial, generally there's some sort of messaging around responsible gaming, responsible gambling.
Disclaimer.
If you or you know somebody who has a problem, call 1-800-GAMBLER. That's a part of their corporate responsibility, right? That's a part of the rules. You want to play in this space, you got to follow the rules that have been set by the governing body. Why doesn't that exist within the hobby when there are so many synergies? It's mind-boggling to me that there isn't some sort of gaming commission that is overseeing all of this. It's literally just Fanatics, Panini, whatnot, eBay, and, you know, we're basically marketing slaves to those higher powers with nobody kind of keeping an eye on any of this to make sure that it's happening fairly and, in such a way that protects the consumer.
Yeah, and I think it's worth noting that what you, Alex, and what Collectors MD is trying to do is not to get rid of it. It's to make it more responsible, more accountable. And I would urge people, when you hear outside factors, other people defending it, saying we don't need regulation or this or this or that, or it's entertainment, it's fun. It's like, oh, someone enters a break because they can't get all the Oakland Raider cards that they want, and this is how they get it. I'm like, sure. And I think it's worth asking what they have to gain and what their incentive is to not want to have regulation on it. And when you dig deeper into what their motivations are and what they get out of using you, you begin to understand why they are operating that the way that they are. Now, we are starting to run out of time here a little bit. So I think, Alex, my last question for you would be, what would you say to someone, or what would you make open to someone who is feeling like maybe they're a bit, out of control or just worried about their own behavior? What can their next steps be to take back some of that control?
Yeah. So what I don't want to do is scare anybody into thinking that they might have a problem. I personally, feel a sense of, obligation, right? Because I have experienced both sides. I know what it's like to chase the high, the rush of a big pull, the late night breaks, the dopamine hits that feel like they'll never come fast enough. I've experienced the spiral, the financial strain, the shame, the mental toll. I've seen how something that starts as a hobby can morph into something far, far more dangerous. But I've also spent years in this space, not just as a collector, but a student of it. I understand the mechanics, the culture, the psychology behind the platforms and the products. I know what's broken and I know where the hope lives. So that's why Collectors MD exists, not because I'm against the hobby. I'm not. I love the hobby. I truly do. I'm passionate about the hobby. But it's because I believe in its potential to be something healthier, more sustainable, and more honest. I feel like I bring a rare combination of lived experience with addiction, deep industry knowledge, and a genuine love for collecting. So again, I really want to, you know, push the point home that I'm not here to tear it down. I'm here to help build a better way forward for myself and for everyone else who's ever felt like they've lost control but still love the card. So if you feel that way, if you feel like you are on a slippery slope and are starting to go down that path where you're overspending beyond your means, you're hiding packages, you're hiding finances, then Collectors MD is here for you. And know that you are not alone and it's okay. And you don't have to give up the hobby. You don't have to quit. There are layers to it. You know, some people might have to, some people might have to take a long break and then, you know, come back to it with a different mindset. But we can identify that together. We can figure that out. And again, with the help of Birch's Health, there are even more professional tools and resources to identify those things. So, you know, if you want to learn more about Collectors MD, you can go to our website, collectorsmd.com. You could check us out on social. We're on Instagram, TikTok, Twitter, Facebook, Mantle, Reddit, a few others. But we want to be wherever the consumer is consuming their content. And we want to make sure that we're providing a space for people to feel that sense of safety, that sense of comfort that, you know, they've been longing for far too long.
Alex Ruffin, thank you for taking the initiative to create Collectors MD. Thank you for your leadership on this issue. Thank you for sharing your story, and I hope that we're able to talk again sometime soon.
Dave, thank you so much for having me, man. It was a pleasure chatting with you, and thank you for your support. It means the world. And looking forward to keeping in touch and seeing where this thing goes.
All right, man. Take care.
All righty.
This holiday season, give the gift that everyone actually wants, Omaha Steaks. Right now, save 50% site-wide, plus an extra $35 off with code HOLIDAYGIFT at checkout. From USDA-certified very tender filet mignons and perfectly aged ribeyes, to juicy burgers and gourmet sides and desserts that make every meal unforgettable, Omaha Steaks brings steakhouse-quality flavor straight to your doorstep. Whether you're gifting family across the country or filling your own freezer, every box arrives perfectly packaged and guaranteed to impress. Because nothing says I love you most like a gift of Omaha Steaks. Skip the malls and the guessing. Go to omahasteaks.com right now. That's omahasteaks.com to save 50% site-wide, plus get an extra $35 off with code HOLIDAYGIFT at checkout. Hurry, this deal won't last. Omaha Steaks, delivering joy since 1917. Minimum purchase may apply. See site for details.